You wouldn't expect the hero of a political military thriller to be a White House press secretary. But it's not surprising when the author of the thriller is a former assistant White House press secretary for national security and foreign affairs. In fact, the author, Bill Harlow, is now the CIA's director of public affairs. His new novel is called Circle William. The title comes from the naval warning to prepare for chemical, biological, or nuclear attack. In the novel, U.S. officials learn that Libya is preparing to launch a secret chemical attack against the U.S. The White House press secretary and his brother, the naval commander of a new high-tech ship, have to prevent panic and try to stop the attack. It's certainly a busy week for Bill Harlow, but he was able to take a few minutes to talk with us. The naval commander in your novel misreads one of the reporters. And he's, you know, he does this interview with a reporter and he's thinking, good thing I talked to that reporter personally. I think she really came around. I walked away from that session feeling really good. Well, it turns out that's not what happened at all. And the article is a public relations nightmare for the Navy. And I'm wondering if that's ever happened to you, if you've totally misjudged a reporter and an article comes out, you know, just really slamming the CIA or slamming, you know, the military when you worked for the military.
I don't think I've ever misjudged one quite as badly as he does in the book, but it's not uncommon for people who don't deal with the media very often to see things in a different light, to not understand some of the impact of the language they're using, or to believe that they're being more persuasive than they might actually be. Those of us that deal with the media on a regular basis, who understand the nuances and the media's agenda and requirements and needs, I think have a bit more realistic viewpoint of how the interviews go. And you also never get carried away with your expectations. And the finest interview that you ever do, or background or whatever, you don't let yourself get carried away with the expectation that it's going to be a real puff piece, because experience has shown that very often they're not.
The reporter in your novel is criticized for not understanding military culture. She's covering a big Navy story. And, you know, the press secretary says to her, do you have any friends at all who were ever in the military? Do you know anything about the military culture? What are your biggest criticisms of the press?
Well, that is one that increasingly you find people covering the military, covering defense, who don't know much about it. Back 15, 20, 30 years ago, most of the reporters covering defense were people who themselves had served in the military. They certainly knew plenty of people who had been in the military, and they had a context to put it in. As we've gone to the all-volunteer force, and many people have not had the opportunity to serve, have not lived around military bases, they just don't understand the culture. For the people who cover the Pentagon full-time, they quickly get up to speed, and the military takes care to get them out to see hardware, to touch and feel ships and planes and tanks, and so they understand what they're talking about. When there's a crisis going on, whether it's the current crisis in Kosovo or the Gulf War, very often reporters get tossed into a story where last week they were covering traffic accidents, and this week they're covering the war, and you often see misperceptions or misunderstandings of the military, either culture, hardware, techniques. And that causes for some of the less than stellar reporting that you occasionally see.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Bill Harlow. His new novel is called Circle William. Bill Harlow is the director of public affairs for the CIA. What are some of the specific challenges you're facing now as director of public affairs for the CIA, as you're getting questions about the bombing of Serbia?
I'd rather not get into that. Not that I couldn't answer it in another setting, but I just don't want to mix too much my sort of avocation and my vocation. I wouldn't want listeners to get the impression that I'm using my public position to sell books. So if you don't mind, we could sort of not do that question.
Yeah, no, well that's fine. But that leads me to wonder if, is it hard for you to have a kind of dual life now, one as a novelist and the other as CIA spokesperson?
It's not the easiest thing in the world. One of the things that you need to understand is that I wrote the book before I came to the CIA. I completed it during my last year of active duty in the Navy. I spent 25 years as a naval officer. And so while there are CIA things in the book, the CIA does not figure too largely in the book. The Navy and the press secretary are really the heroes of the book. So now, as people know that I'm the spokesman for the CIA, they tend to wonder, well, why isn't the CIA more central to it? Why isn't the CIA all that heroic? And the answer is, I wrote it before I got to the agency, that perhaps if I do another book sometime, you know, the agency will be more amply reflected in that book. But this one was done in my spare time, in my last capacity. And now that the book is out, I take vacation time, a day here, a day there, or an hour here, an hour there, to go out and promote it. And I work carefully with the ethics lawyers at the agency to make sure that I don't do anything which crosses the bounds, so that I'm not inappropriately mixing my avocation with my vocation.
What are some of those lines that you're trying not to cross?
Well, I don't use my CIA role to get attention for the book, or I try to make sure that the publisher did not publicize it as CIA spokesman's novel.
No, in fact, under your name on the cover, it says Bill Harlow, Captain, United States Navy, parentheses, retired.
Right.
Doesn't even mention the CIA.
That's right. It somewhere in the back flap, very small print, it might mention what I'm currently doing, but we've gone out of our way not to highlight that, because I don't want to inappropriately use the job. On the other hand, I you know, freely admit what I do. I'm the most overt employee of a fairly secretive organization, so I can't deny where I work. But this is definitely something that I do as my avocation, and something that I do in my own time.
Does keeping secrets come pretty naturally to you?
No comment. No. I understand the need for securing some information that were to get out inappropriately, it could cause damage to national security. But I think I'm a reasonably open person. I try to find ways to convey what information we can, so that if you're in the Navy and somebody asks you a question about a ship or a weapon system and you can't tell them exactly what they want to know, there's probably something else you can tell them that approximates that gets them where they want to go, and you don't have to give them the exact targets that carrier aircraft are aiming at, or the time that a ship will sail. But you can give them enough information to answer their needs and to convey the message you want to convey without doing any damage to national security. It's a challenge, but that's what makes it fun.
My guest is Bill Harlow, Director of Public Affairs for the CIA. He's written a new thriller called Circle William. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is the CIA's chief spokesperson, Bill Harlow. He's written a new political military thriller called Circle William. In the book, the White House press secretary doesn't like the Secretary of State, and one day when the Secretary of State is making a speech, the press secretary mutters to himself, "What a windbag," not realizing that there's an open mic from C-SPAN just a few feet away, and so his comments are actually picked up by television and end up making front page headlines. Now, that's a gaffe that kind of happened to Ronald Reagan when he didn't know a mic was on and he said, "When do we start bombing?" But I'm wondering about some of the gaffes that you've made that you might want to share with us.
I haven't had as many opportunities for live microphones as presidents and presidential press secretaries have. So I haven't had anything quite that colorful. I have said some things to print reporters which, when strung together, have appeared harsher in print than they should be. I recall, as a young Navy spokesman on the news desk in the Pentagon for the Navy, I was asked a question about President Carter's plans to sell the presidential yacht Sequoia, and I was just trying to say, well, he's the president, and of course, you know, whatever he wants to do is okay with us. But the way it came out, it sounded like, well, he's the commander-in-chief and he can do anything he wants, no matter how foolish, said Navy spokesman Bill Harlow, which didn't go over real well with the White House at the time, but I managed to survive that. My career survived it. And I think people who deal with the press on a regular basis know that it's not a 100% foolproof business, and from time to time you're going to you're going to make a mistake, and hopefully your boss understands that as well.
So how did you handle that? Did you point the finger at the reporter and say, look, this isn't what I said, I was just misinterpreted, or did you apologize?
A little bit of both. I was summoned to my boss's office and several other bosses' office to explain what I meant and what I had to say. And I think that was early in the administration, and I think they, when they recognized that was a reasonably young, inexperienced spokesman, they just sort of laughed it off. So I managed to live to respond another day.
Is there a classic spokesperson gaffe that you've been taught to avoid? The kind of textbook case that when you were coming up, you were taught about?
Well, there. I guess probably the biggest thing that you're told is don't respond to hypothetical questions. Well, what would you do if?
Mm-hmm.
Because it just gets you down a road that you don't want to go. It's tough enough to answer the questions about what has happened or what you are definitely going to do, and you just don't want to get yourself in trouble by speculating what might happen based on things that you have no control over. The other thing is that sometimes people can get too colorful. In an effort to be responsive, to be humorous, if you can make some comments or statements that in cold type look a bit harsh. My old boss, Marlon Fitzwater, in his book about his days in the White House, Call the Briefing is the title of his book, and he talks about how he decided to respond to some of Gorbachev's initiatives by referring to him as a drugstore cowboy. And once he did that, there was a big flurry and a storm of protest, and he certainly didn't mean to cause an international incident, but I'm sure that he immediately after saying that wished that he had used language that was a bit less colorful.
So sometimes it's better to be dull than colorful.
I've made a career out of being dull.
Well, but you can't do that when you're writing a novel.
That is a challenge. That is a challenge. But I think what I hope that the novel shows is that it gives people an understanding about how things actually are. You know, there are a lot of novels that are written based on the White House as a setting or the Pentagon or Navy ships. And what makes this one a little bit different, I think, is that the author, in this case me, I've had an opportunity to work in all those places. So I'm not really making it up. I'm not inventing the way things are there. I pretty well know how people interact with each other. And so I try to convey that with a sense of realism that I hope comes through in the book.
No, I read in a press item that the White House Press Secretary Joe Lockhart called to say that the president liked your novel, and then you told the press about that. And I can't help but wonder if this was, you know, a little arranged, you know what I mean? If Joe Lockhart, like, knows you, if you're kind of like press secretary buddy types. and he wanted to do you a favor and everything.
That's not entirely accurate description of what happened, but a friend of mine turns out apparently is a friend of some people at the White House, and mm-hmm. this friend of mine read the book and liked it, and he knew that the president likes this kind of book, and he sent him a copy of it for him to read at some point. It turned out that as the president was flying back from King Hussein's funeral on Air Force One, he was reading the book, and when he finished the book, he took it back and was going to give it to Joe Lockhart, because one of the heroes of the book is a press secretary, and he thought Joe might find that interesting and enjoyable, since press secretaries aren't often depicted as heroes. And turned out Joe was sleeping on the plane, so he just left it for him with a note. A day or two later, Joe called my office to let me know that, and I happened not to be there that day, and he told some members of my staff I was having a book party the next day, and they were chatting to people at the book party, including some people in the media, so word got out that way. But it wasn't a setup, although I have no complaints about the fact that word got out that President Clinton enjoyed the book. And in fact, the president wrote a little note in the copy and sent it back to me. And the book, I've also sent a copy to my old boss, President Bush, and I understand President Carter has also read it. So I'm doing pretty well with the president and ex-president market.
Yeah, right. Well, Bill Harlow, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you very much.
Bill Harlow is the CIA's Director of Public Affairs. His new novel is called Circle William.